is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Shout, coconut woman is calling out, and every day you can hear her shout, get your coconut water, man, it's good for your daughter. Coca got a lot of iron, make you strong like a lion. A lady tell me the other day, no one can take a sweet man away. I asked her what was the mystery. She said coconut water and a rice curry. You can cook it in a pot, you can serve it very hot. Coca got a lot of iron, make you strong like a lion.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 26th of April, 2023, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Welcome, welcome back. I'm glad you guys are tuned in to Guardian Radio. My guest is about to join us in the Zoom room. Producer, is she there yet? She is? Okay, great. We're going to be having another interesting conversation this morning. It's going to be very interesting. I want to make a small note about something that I haven't talked about in a long time, mainly because my 2 foot could not touch road for the longest of time. And I could not drive myself, and I've spent very little time on the roads of New Providence while my foot has been on dry dock. And I want to say, though, as I've increased my presence on the roads of New Providence, that it's not even a matter of being impressed. I'm scared. I'm scared for y'all. I'm scared on multiple levels. I'm scared that, you see, you look at the roads, you watch people drive, you would think that it's a lack of critical thinking that would cause decisions that they're making on the road. But that's not as really, really scary, is that it's about a lack of empathy. See, because we have very smart people in the Bahamas. We have people who could navigate all kind of situation. I mean, all kind of personal, interpersonal, romantic gymnastics, right? People, you got people in this country, women juggling 2-3 jobs and 5 children and maybe 2 men, you never know. I just saying, we are a smart bunch of people. So that's not what it is. This isn't about a lack of smarts. It's not even about a lack of critical thinking per se. It's about a lack of empathy. It's that we don't care enough about each other to employ the skills and resources that we do have when they are most necessary. The problems that we have in this country are very easy to identify, if not easy to solve. But like our friend G.I. Joe said, knowing is half the battle. We got to work on this empathy thing, you know. And I know there's a car right now, the license plate AW17777, who's saying to themselves, oh, I wish Erin had practiced some empathy. I don't know why she's blowing her horn. She practiced some spatial awareness. She could see we were stopping our car to let somebody cross the road. And I just want to say, that's not exactly what empathy looks like in these situations. What it looks like is that you do not obstruct traffic. Like, you don't stop your car just to let somebody turn in or out of a corner because it makes you feel good in the moment. You know? Oh, I let them out the corner because I got the power. It's not the right thing to do, because even though it makes you feel empowered and powerful that you could control the road, you're obstructing traffic. You're not practicing much empathy at all. You see, and when you're sitting there saying, it's so unfair, they're sitting in the corner and they can't get out, right? That's how you can let them out. Although on the surface, that really seems like the right thing to do. Let's talk about it for a moment. This is a perfect example of what I mean when I say that we need to start examining structural reforms versus relying on charity to solve problems that systems that we pay for should already be solving. We have a problem with the development of the roads in the country. We know in the most recent road project that a major portion of the design of the road was intended to aid the police, right, by routing roads in a way that makes it easier for police to control the flow of traffic and to interdict or to catch criminals who use cars, right, to traverse the roads as a main means of transportation. Right, like, so we know that. But here's something that we've also gleaned. When you look at the roundabouts, right, at the major intersections where traffic travels from the south to the north and from the north to the south and east and west, we realize that there are some, like, biases that pop up that manifest in the construction of the road design. I absolutely avoid using Gladstone Road to travel north. Right? To exit Gladstone Road from the northern intersection, I almost refuse to do it. It's always backed up with traffic, but it's designed in a way, right, where it takes longer for cars traveling south to north to move through the little intersection than it does for cars moving east to west and west to east, right, and even north to south. And I think we see that in a number of the roundabout slash intersections on that major thoroughfare, Tonic Darling Highway, going all the way up to East Street roundabout. It's a lack of empathy. Or maybe it is by design. Maybe it was intended to slow down traffic moving from the south to the north. Let's practice more empathy. Because we've got the resources, we have the money, and we have the brain power, and we have the talent, and we have good-hearted people. But until we hit critical mass on these other soft skills like empathy and spatial awareness, right? We're not going to reach our full potential. We're not going to maximize what it is we can, as Bahamians, produce. We're just not going to do it. Joining me this morning is Alicia Wallace, founder of Equality Bahamas, and one of the co-directors for the documentary Two-Faced Gender Equality in the Bahamas that is premiering tonight at It's tonight, the 26th, at 7 p.m. at Fusion Superplex. And Ms. Wallace is here to talk with us today a bit about the documentary and her role as a co-producer. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and so we're going to end off the month with another discussion about sexual assault and issues related to it. We're talking about the Strike 5 campaign, the quote-unquote marital rape bill, and this thing they're talking about, I just heard about it, the new domestic violence bill. And I'm hoping that Alicia Wallace can sort of give us a briefer on the new bills that are about to be tabled or that we could expect to be tabled in the near future, what they're all about, and what Equality Bahamas has been up to during the month of April, because April, again, is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you.
Awesome.
Listen, I know we're here to speak about a specific subject, but it just hit me. I have been, my mobility has been restricted for the last 6.5 weeks. And so issues around women and mobility and women who are disabled and the issues that they face have been like forefront in my mind. And if we have enough time, I'd love for Equality Bahamas to share any resources it has or links or referrals to programs for women world with restricted mobility.
Definitely, definitely. I have been walking around quite a bit, and it's quite interesting to be walking and then the sidewalk just ends.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what to do next.
Absolutely. You have to become a stuntman. And learn how to wheelie off the edge of these sidewalks. But let's get to the documentary on Monday. Ed Fields and Cindy Gaudet, two participants in the documentary, joined us to talk about it from their perspective. So it's great to have somebody. I think that you are in the documentary, but you also worked on the production side as well, right?
Yes, I did. A very new experience for me to work in this way on a film. It's been a really great experience, and understanding what's happening behind the camera has been quite eye-opening for me.
This is awesome. You are one of the leading women's rights advocates in the country. Could we talk briefly, I guess, about what role you actually played in the project and how important it is to have stakeholders, right? You are, I'd say, a gender expert at this point. How important it is to have stakeholders at the table for the documentary, you know, for the creation of the documentary?
Well, Gina Rogers-Seeley had this idea to produce the documentary and really focus on women's rights in the Bahamas. You know, where have we been? How far have we come? What is the work that we still have to do? And who are the people who are doing that work? And that is how she got connected with me. And I started working with her to identify other people, women in particular, to talk about the work that we're doing in some of the major campaigns, like the campaign to criminalize marijuana, and issues that have been lingering for a very long time without getting any action, like gender inequality in nationality rights, which we tried to look at with the 2016 referendum. And we've been going kind of back and forth with the government about how we address this issue, seeing that we're not able to amend the Constitution without the consent of the people through 50% plus one voting yes in a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to explore these issues and hear from different people about, you know, why does this issue exist? What does it take to move the public on the issue? And what are our expectations of the government? And I think a few months into this project, we realized that, you know, what we're missing is the stories. We need survivor stories, people who have experiences of domestic violence, of intimate partner violence, of sexual violence, ensuring that they have the space to share their stories and to do it in ways that are comfortable and natural to them.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that can be quite empowering for survivors. I think a lot of times we shy survivors to these spaces thinking that it's going to re-traumatize them, which it can do.
Mm-hmm.
But giving them the agency is really important so that they can say yes or no, that they want to participate, they don't want to participate, or they are prepared to participate in a particular way. And then also understanding our responsibility to ensure that they have access to resources in case there is a triggering or a re-traumatization that happens unexpectedly. So there was quite a lot being pulled together to make this documentary happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really looking forward to sharing it with the public this evening.
All right. Let me just call the names of your co-producers or the other producers on the project. The documentary, Two-Faced gender equality in the Bahamas is produced by Erica Mariah James, PhD, Marion Bethel Sayers, Patrice Thompson, Alicia Wallace, Gina Rogers Seeley. I know that I am. I participated in the documentary. I shared. I did an interview. But tell me, who else is in the documentary?
Marion Bethel is in the documentary, and of course, she's talking a bit about a particular international mechanism, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, also known as CEDAW, or the Bill of Women's Rights. And I think most people know by now that Marion is an expert on the CEDAW committee. So she goes to Geneva to review different states multiple times a year. And she is an expert on this convention and has really been pushing for the government to meet its obligations through its ratification of CEDAW almost 30 years ago. We ratified in 1993, and in October we will be at 30 years since ratification. So she focuses on CEDAW in particular and really brings an international human rights perspective to the national situation. We also have Gaynell Curry, who is also a human rights expert, has spent many years working at the United Nations, both in New York and in Geneva, and is currently an independent expert on the UN Permanent Forum for People of African Descent, also bringing a human rights perspective to the conversation about ending gender-based violence in particular and getting rid of discriminatory laws and moving toward gender equality.
Okay.
We have Fran Dillard as well, who's a volunteer with Equality Bahamas, along with several other NGOs, a very fierce feminist and mother and wife. And she brings all of that with her to her work, and her expertise is really in that lived experience of, you know, really deeply believing in equality of all people and wanting to see women have equal ability to not just survive, but thrive.
Let's stick a pin right there. Fran Dillard are the two names that everyone should know in the Bahamas. Fran Dillard is one of them, and Donna Nichols is the other one, right? Two names in women's organizing, right? Not just sort of like the advocacy side of it, but women's organizing. Fran Dillard is one of those people that made sure that you could have your meeting, right? Fran Dillard lent herself to spaces where work was being done because she has a wealth of institutional knowledge, things that aren't necessarily documented in organizational files even, let alone the media. Fran has been on the scene for, 40 years, easily, right? Advocating in different forms for the advancement, not just the advancement of women's rights, but for the essential core of gender equality, which is that everyone has a right to a life free of violence. But more than that, Fran is a producer of feminists.
That is right.
Right, and
it's produced.
Sure, and it's so, like, Fran is one of those people, like, you could see the value of the tree from the fruit that it produces, and she lives what she preaches. And so,
absolutely,
I just wanted to stick a pin there. I mean, Fran of CAFRA, Caribbean Association for Feminist Research and Action. That's when I got on the scene. Fran had been organizing well beyond that. Fran was a part of CRAFT, the Constitutional Roundtable and Forum team, where we organized about half a year, 6 months worth of debates leading into the 2002. Referendum that included the gender question. Fran is a longtime soldier, and up, like I said, up there with the giants and the legends like Donna Nichols and Dr. Patterson and Cleopatra Christie and Lila Green even. I say good morning to Fran. But after I run out about Fran, let's talk about some of the other people in the documentary.
We also have survivors like the one you had on your show, Cindy.
Cindy Gaudette, yes.
Yes, we also hear from a couple of other survivors with very different stories, stories that I think people need to hear. And I am definitely warning people that some of them are very difficult. Maybe all of them are very difficult to listen to. You know, mm-hmm. it's hard to watch someone tell a story like this and kind of see them in some way reliving the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so important to hear these stories to understand what is happening and the impact that it has on people, not just in that moment during the incident, not just when they, you know, first attempt to report it, but 10, 20, 30, maybe even 40 years later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm hoping to make it out there tonight. Let me see what my one foot could do. But I think it's going to be a wonderful time. Again, Two-Faced, Gender Equality, spotlighting the oftentimes taboo topic of gender inequality in the Bahamas, is premiering tonight, Wednesday, the 26th of April at 7 p.m. at Fusion Superplex. It is the premiere. The cost of the event is $40, but there is a reception, I think, before or after the documentary, right, Alicia?
After the documentary, there will be a little panel discussion, and then the reception will follow.
Okay, no, that is awesome, because like right then, that's why I also want to talk about how important it is to have stakeholders at the table. So not just when you're working on a project like this, to have the experts in the production process, but for policy creation, whether at an organizational level or at a governmental level, how important it is to have stakeholders at the table. Because after watching content as heavy as this, people are going to need a space in which they feel free or safe expressing their emotions and the thoughts that have been evoked by what they've seen and heard. And so if to speak or don't actually speak, having the space itself open to dialogue, right? Giving people who had this experience of watching the documentary together sort of time and space to be in a room so that, you know, if they do want to talk, you know, if that naturally happens, they can, or they could just have witnesses. Because you went through what I just went through. I think that's an important part of the process as well.
Most definitely. I think the discussion is really important. It's a great opportunity to hear how other people are thinking about the issues and other people's responses. And sometimes two people can watch the same thing and take away two completely different things. Or there might be something that you pick up on that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring my attention to it, it deepens my understanding of what I've just consumed and maybe changes the way that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the discussion is a really important component. And I think it will be interesting to hear from other survivors in the room. It'll be interesting to hear from people who have never experienced this before or had no real understanding of what we read about in the news. You know, mm-hmm. you might read about there being a quote unquote domestic dispute that escalates. And it's easy to the news, to the reports, and especially now where it's happening so frequently. And hearing the details from someone can really change the way that you think about that. And in these kinds of spaces, we can often witness a moment of someone completely shifting their position or developing a new understanding, even as they speak or they engage in a conversation. And it's a really powerful thing to witness learning on the spot and the openness, the willingness of people to learn and to change their positions.
All right. Can I recommend, like, should I recommend this documentary to people who engaged in the conversations about marital rape and sort of the impact of sexual assault on victims, on society as a whole? Can I suggest that they come to watch this documentary if at any point in time they have doubted what people and what advocates and what, in particular, what women have been saying about how, about these issues and how they feel as women, as people, because it's not, you know, although the majority of incidents, women may be victims, that doesn't mean that men are not experiencing the same things, right? Like, what do can I recommend this movie to people who say, man, I don't believe what these women saying. I think they're exaggerating. Is this a good space for those people?
Definitely. It's a great opportunity to learn to listen, to come open, mm-hmm. willing to hear people's, not just experiences, but their perspectives on what they've experienced. And from people who have been thinking about these issues. Now, there are people who believe what they believe. Mm-hmm. And because they have bought into a particular set of gender ideologies, their position is that women are not people or women are subhuman, and that men are supposed to dominate. Mm-hmm. Will this documentary change those people's minds? I don't know. There's a chance. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's worth spending the time. Absolutely. The documentary has already been made. All of these people have showed up to be on screen, to share their thinking, to share their stories. Why not come and listen to what people have to say?
Absolutely. Ms. Wallace, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to put the question on the table right now. We're going to talk about the Strike 5 campaign. Right. And the marital rape bill. And then I want to ask the question, will not calling it marital rape make conviction more likely? Will not calling it that thing make it more likely, easier to convict people of that? 1 o'clock with Erin Green. Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas is joining me this morning. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, but just a hard day at work.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious boy, this real serious boy.
But what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
After a hurricane or storm, get the Nassau Guide. The guide will tell you where to purchase building and cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and much more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches and after it departs. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300. 302-2300, or call your account executive. Will you be prepared?
My mommy made sure that I was vaccinated because she loves me.
Getting our precious little ones vaccinated protects them from so many diseases like polio, measles, and whooping cough. Vaccines are safe and effective. Immunizations can prevent illnesses and even death.
As we celebrate our 50th year of independence,
Let's move forward to protecting ourselves and each other from vaccine-preventable diseases. Upward to achieving the highest vaccination rates in the region, and onward to a safer, healthier Bahamas. We can achieve this together. In New Providence, Lizard and Town Clinic, Flamingo Gardens Clinic, Elizabeth Estate Clinic, or if you're in the Family Island Clinic, visit any of your routine vaccination clinics for vaccines. COVID-19 vaccines are also available.
This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and USAID.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Eric. I got a message for you guys. This Friday and Saturday, April 28th and 29th, the Central Bank will be hosting a financial literacy fair and digital expo at Fusion Superplex on Gladstone Road. Learn more about investments, savings, insurance, digital payment solutions, and more. Up to $50,000 in sand dollars will be given away. You can use your sand dollars anywhere sand dollars accepted. This includes the Red Cross Fair that's being held this Saturday and Sunday at Arawaki. The first 600 sand dollar wallet holders at the fair will receive 50% off adult admission and free admission for kids. Hear that? The first 600 sand dollar wallet holders at the fair, that's the Red Cross Fair at Arawaki this Saturday and Sunday, will receive 50% off adult admission and free admission for kids. This is exciting. The Central Bank Financial Literacy Fair and Digital Expo at Fusion Superplex, that's the 28th and the 29th, that's Friday and Saturday, and then the Red Cross Fair, that's Saturday and Sunday at Arawaki. Gladstone Road, then Arawaki this weekend. Sand Dollar, the Central Bank. What a wonderful time. What a wonderful time. Aye, producer, when Red Cross expand to 2 days? This is the first time, eh? They've been 2 days for a while now? Man, this is awesome. I didn't know. I wake on a Saturday, and I just thought, you know, well, I miss it because I got to get out there. I have to go borrow a foot or something. Reach on to Betty Kay. This is fantastic. You guys remember, lots to do this weekend. Educational and community-minded events. Central Bank Financial Literacy Fair and Digital Expo at Fusion, and then Red Cross Fair, the annual, the only Red Cross Fair, fritters and raffle. That's what fairs are for. It's going to be a good time. Miss Wallace.
Yes.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So I put the question on the table, will not calling it marital rape make conviction more likely? That's because the Minister of National Security has indicated over the last couple of years that I guess he thinks that the best legal strategy is to change the name of the act to make it more likely to achieve convictions in the act. Tell us briefly about, or remind us about, Equality Bahamas' Strike Five campaign.
The Strike Five campaign was relaunched on International Women's Day in 2020, and we thought it was really important to be very clear about the criminalization of marital rape and being explicit in saying we need to acknowledge that marital rape is rape. It's not a special category. It's not something completely separate. Rape is rape, regardless of your relationship to the person. Your father, your brother, your cousin, your teacher, your pastor, your husband, doesn't matter who did it. If it's not consensual, it's rape. So the campaign is very clear about the way that we want to see marital rape criminalized, and that is through some specific amendments to the Sexual Offenses Act. The first one is to amend Section 3, which has a definition of rape, that has in it these five words, who is not his spouse. Mm-hmm. The campaign is named for this reason. We want to strike out those five words, who is not his spouse. That is the part of the definition that provides this exception, mm-hmm. where it's supposedly okay to rape your spouse, which we know it is not okay. So we need to take that out of the definition. Mm-hmm. We want to see a statutory definition of Consent Act. At the moment, there is not one. It refers to the definition of consent that is in the penal code, which of course is ancient and it's very general. It can apply to different laws. So we need a definition of consent that's specific to sexual activity. We also want to see a clause of non-immunity on the basis of marriage. So making it clear that marriage, being married to the survivor or the victim, is not a defense.
Right.
For the criminal act of rape.
Yeah. So not just striking the five words, but making it explicit, right? Not just pellucidly clear, but explicitly clear that you are married to the person does not excuse you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So what's your response to the changing of legal language, right? Sort of related to this question, from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse?
That it's nonsense.
Okay.
It's not acceptable. And I've heard that in the news, in news reports, sexual violence is referred to in these very minimizing ways.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about statutory rape, we're talking about the violation of young people,
mm-hmm.
of people who are under the age of consent, recognizing that they are not legally able to give consent. So let's talk about a 15-year-old cannot give consent, is taken advantage of by an adult. If you can't give consent, we've already covered this, where there is no consent, it's rape, it's not sex. Why would we call that unlawful sexual intercourse? Why would we use this clunky language that minimizes the act? It's mm-hmm. it's a mischaracterization. We are in danger of minimalizing acts of sexual violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it really contributes to and is a part of rape culture. This environment that we're in that says that rape and other forms of sexual violence are okay. They're normal or they're acceptable in certain circumstances, like when we have the idea that a child is quote unquote okay with something or quote unquote wanted something, ignoring that brains are underdeveloped and they cannot legally consent. And so we're prepared to just sort of brush it away and refer to it as though it is something akin to sex when it's not.
Yes. I got some interesting texts here. Dear texters, I'm going to get to your texts in a moment, but one of them I'm going to ask you now. Just quickly, we're going to get back to the subject. People are asking, if they can't make it to the premiere, how can they watch the documentary? When is it slated for wide distribution, for distribution in the local market?
So we don't have dates for that just yet. This premiere is the start of that, and we are looking to feature it in film festivals going forward. And as soon as that happens, we will definitely share those dates and let you know when it'll be distributed more widely in country. There is a screening that is planned for Grand Bahama in particular.
Okay.
And we'll have more information on the dates and times and locations in the coming weeks.
I'm going to suggest that ZNS should buy this documentary and play it regularly to replace some of the non-Bahamian programming that they are currently playing. I'm not saying the non-Bahamian programming is bad. I'm just saying, why run non-Bahamian programming when you could have Bahamian programming to play on your Bahamian station? Okay, so let's get back to this conversation, right? We're changing the names of acts to make conviction more likely, like to make it easier to convict people. And now we're negotiating plea deals to make convictions more likely. And then I'm going to say, is that a suitable response to the inability to convict in this crime? Or, right, alone in and of itself, should that, should the plea deals, I'm not for the changing of names at all, but the plea deal, I can kind of understand. But is that just a poor strategy, right, in response to what appears to be poor policing and poor investigative and prosecutorial skills, right? Is the plea deal an appropriate, or is it, you know, is it problematic? Because I am troubled by recent cases where it appears that people are getting like lenient sentences for things that really should be considered as bad, serious crimes. Ms. Wallace? Ms. Wallace? All right.
Hi, are you hearing me?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I think it's a lazy approach and we're really going at it on the wrong side.
Mm-hmm.
We need to figure out why conviction is so difficult or why the rates are low.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really because of the name of the crime or the name of the act?
Right. And if
is there a problem with the collection and representation of evidence? Is it a problem with the judicial system, with the courts?
And if it's a social issue, right? If it's a social issue that you just can't, Carl, I'm coming to you right now, don't go. You just can't get convictions because the juries, the pairs, don't believe that these are the serious crimes, or that they don't convict because they think the penalty is too serious. Shift that social dynamic, that culture. Or will it just reinforce the idea that there's nothing wrong with this behavior?
And when we look at changing names, it's usually, again, minimizing the act.
Let me get to this caller, Ms. Wallace. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Well, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning. How are you?
Not bad, and I want to say good morning to your guest. I wanted to make a comment on this marital rape proposed bill that may be brought forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I'm having with that is that, and I agree with you and Mr. Monroe, it's going to be hard to get a conviction with that because it's almost like a he say, she say thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And it's hard to get a conviction with that. But the problem I'm having, if it is found out, I wonder if these ladies are putting this in the same basket. If it is found out that a complainant has really lied because of whatever reason they have to incriminate somebody and the facts are not there and it's not true and it's proven mm-hmm. to be lie. Would these persons be given automatically 5 years for that, for defaming a person's character and for whatever drags the person through? Is this in the consideration of this whole package? Because it can't be that somebody could just willy-nilly accuse somebody and then they don't suffer no consequences for that. The law have to be where it is. Says seems to be balanced. Not take what you give back to the public if it's not true. And is this a part of what they're advocating for? I would like to know that.
I'll respond to that, Ms. Wallace. You want to respond?
I'm happy for you to respond, but I do want to note that there is already a law against false complaints.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something that we need to create or build into the act in particular. There are existing laws for that. And I also want to note that potential misuse of a law is not a reason not to have the law.
Absolutely. And on that note, Ms. Wallace has indicated, I think correctly, that these laws exist. I mean, we have what's called a malicious, an offense called malicious prosecution. And then we get an offense called unlawful detention, right? And so I want to put this sort of question on the table to the audience. A lot of men have been accused of rape. A lot of women have been accused of rape. And I say to you guys, these laws exist. These things exist. why you think it is that these people don't use those laws to go after people who have falsely accused them is two things, right? Most people stand in their own integrity and say, look here, I know that I'm not guilty, and the people who know me know that I don't engage in behavior like this, so I'm not going to create an environment where this person further embarrasses themselves, right? Whatever's happening with them, I'm not going to take it that far. Some people go through sort of like private action. They keep it very private, and they, you know, they get a lawyer. The lawyer sends a letter, and they say, I'm going to use the mechanisms that are available to me, you know, to deal with this. And then there's a portion of people who don't respond, and they don't use those laws because they are concerned that what they actually do may come to light. And they don't want to go down that road. I say all that to say that these laws exist. They're sirs. They're men who are deathly concerned that they may or may not be accused of rape. I also have one more little fail-proof piece of advice. Right? You got a fail-proof piece of advice. Protect yourself by removing yourself from these situations. Like, you all like to tell women, you know, if you wasn't out on the road at night. I mean, I know you worked a late shift, but you could have bought a helicopter so you didn't have to be on the road at night. If you wasn't out late at night, you wouldn't experience this traumatic thing. You know, if you are very afraid that women are going to accuse you of rape, if you're afraid that your wife is going to accuse you of rape, you got a couple of options. One, don't get married. Two, live your life in an exemplary way. About what you do or what you are prepared to do. That's one thing you could do. But to suggest that there should be no law because you may be falsely accused in the future is ridiculous. All right, Alicia, the texts are coming in. It says, as a man, I can't even walk into a police station to file a sexual assault or rape against a woman. So what court is going to prosecute a woman for falsely claiming rape? Dear texter, as a man, you can walk into a police station to file a sexual assault claim or to file, you know, to report that you've been raped by a woman or by a man. You could go into a police station and do that at any time. Now, if you're saying to me that fellow Bahamians, right, police officers, fellow men, because a lot of them, I think the majority of police officers are men. If you're telling me you go into a police station and men are looking at you and laughing at you or refusing to take the report, who is the problem? What is the problem? If the laws are on the books, but the police officers refuse to take your complaint. That's happened to me a couple of times when I've attempted to report harassment, like people are harassing me because they perceived that I was gay because I was an advocate and I talk about these things publicly. They knew that I was gay. And the text goes on to say, and laughed out by police, because according to the definition in law, a woman can't rape a man if his anus wasn't penetrated. Listen, texter, this is at the point, without diminishing the experience of men who have been raped, right? That's not what I'm doing here. I want to say to you, what is the problem? Is the problem other men who refuse to take this seriously? Is the problem men who refuse to create support groups for men so that when men experience this, they have a team of people who are prepared to take the matter forward with them? Are you suggesting that women are responsible because police, the majority of which are men, don't take men's claims seriously? Is that what you're telling me? Texas says the problem is the law and courts. That's one-sided. The majority of lawmakers are men. The majority of cabinet ministers are men. And I'm sure there's an inner cabinet and the majority of them are men too. We're not diminishing the experiences of men here. What I'm saying is, who is to blame, since you want to lay blame.
In addition to that, Aaron, it's important to make connections between these experiences and systems. And I don't just mean cabinet and court systems, but the systems that determine how all of those work. And one of them is the gender ideology that we've been living with. The same gender ideology that tells us that women are objects and women must be subservient,
mm-hmm.
and women are to be in service to men,
mm-hmm.
also tells us that men are to be masculine and aggressive and strong and should protect themselves. Mm-hmm. So the same systems that tell us that women are weak and are to be made victims, to be victimized, tells us that men cannot be victims. So yeah. We're not talking about two separate things. Yes, we do center women and girls, and I include LGBTQI plus people when I talk about these issues, because we are the people who are disproportionately impacted, mm-hmm. negatively impacted by gender stereotypes and this ancient gender ideology that we need to break away from. At the same time, let's recognize that all of these whatabouts that people bring up that are related to men and boys are also connected to patriarchy and misogyny and the general hatred and disregard and disdain for anything that is considered feminine, mm-hmm. which people believe must be in direct opposition to what is masculine.
I got you. Listen, I got one more call to take, and I'm going to try to read about two or three texts before we go. Good morning, caller. All right. For the people who were calling in and couldn't make it, I'm going to beg Mr. Newry, if he is running an open line, to maybe open his side, his hour to some of the calls and texts. Because I know people were calling in, and it's difficult, but I'm glad, to be balanced in this way. I'd like to thank you, Ms. Wallace, for sharing with us once again. Let me just couple texts. The laws of rape exist already also. There is no need for the marital rape bill. Please be equal in your judgments. It said, read my text, please. Dear texter, I guess I should have gotten to this one earlier. It just came in. I just want to say, there are no provisions in law to protect spouses from that which is called rape outside of a marriage within a marriage. There is no law. Other than what you should do is you should engage in a formal separation from your spouse. And then you can use the laws. I think that misses the point. Let's keep talking about it. Also, I rebuke the idea suggested by Mr. Monroe that this is really a conversation only for married people or people who were married. That makes no sense to me. Another text, the politicians so weak refuse to protect women and afraid of the religious zealots. Let's never discount the intersection of political expediency in these decisions. Text says, the text I was back and forth with says, wow, AKA men are the problem. Nobody said men are the problem. What we said is stop suggesting that women are the problem. It's systemic. Patriarchy is systemic. And isn't it unfortunate that now that men are also victims of patriarchy, they expect women to extend their hands to help them survive the system that men have perpetuated? Women have perpetuated it too. Great show as usual. Okay, yeah, if a girl says she don't want to have sex, simply don't touch. I gotta go, texters. Thank you very much. I'm pushing the limit with my producer. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry is up next. Thank you for texting and stay in for the other side.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.